Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What up, Star Rock here, host and content creator for AURN, and you are watching the AURN podcast. I got my co-host, Jonathan Elias, and we have a special guest, Roy Wood Jr.
Yes. Blackness. Blackness. I feel like I'm disappearing into this background.
Oh, no.
Just a floating
is that the concept? Is that the horror concept? Yeah. We're having lots of interesting conversations about horror and black people and horror history and all that good stuff, and how darkness and comedy kind of.
Oh, yeah, it's all. Yeah, I just choose not to cry about stuff. I just make you laugh instead.
But I want to use that to kind of segue into Tribulations, right? Which is a show that a live show that you've been doing. Is it over? Is it?
No,
are you touring?
No, we're still percolating. So we're doing one June 17th in New York City over at City Winery. And true, like what it is, first and foremost. Tribulations is a show where anonymous audience members tell me and other comedians what they're going through in real life. And we go through this little spreadsheet, little app, whatever. Me and the comedians go through real problems, deep stuff. And we clown these people for their problems. And we talk trash and we give you terrible solutions. Then we have an actual licensed therapist, beautiful black woman named Bea Arthur, who is one of the top in her craft. And B comes on stage and unpacks it for real and gives real solutions. And so we kind of treat it as a way, as a group, to kind of laugh about things, but also at the same side of things, kind of, you know, give people a real solution to some stuff. And so that's a show that we do live, but eventually we're going to grow it into, you know, you can also live stream it. Even if you missed it and you don't live in New York, you can go, you can pay $5 and watch it. But we're trying to grow that into something national. Have a little room like this to do something. But, you know, it was something that, you know, I came up with my co-creator during the pandemic, where you could see a lot of people going through stuff and a lot of people having issues. And we were just like, yo, what if we just did a show where everybody just say what's wrong?
I mean, society is not set up that to, in a way that is really conducive to being sane, to be honest. Like,
but, society is also very isolating, and I don't think we really realize how much, and I don't think we're going to know for years what working from home does to someone's mental state. Because for a lot of people, if you're already alone and you work from home, that's one less group of people to interact with. Now, I know a lot of us are introverts, but not everybody.
That's true.
A lot of people need interaction. A lot of people need that little bit of human touch. You know, I joke about it on stage, but I'm serious. Self-checkout is bad from a social standpoint because back in the day, you would have a little chit-chat with the cashier.
Yeah.
Now, granted, if you got a good cashier, you might be at the hood Walgreens.
Right.
But if you were in a particular mental state, sometimes a quick 5 to 10 second conversation with a stranger can be enough to just get you to tomorrow. Absolutely. So, you know, we're definitely living in a state where isolation is the default. And so we just wanted to create a show outside of my regular stand-up comedy tour where we're able to kind of try and get to the bottom of some things. Or if nothing else, let you know you're not alone. And that other people are going through it too, and that might help. You know, I'm not no therapist, so I'm not gonna sit there and act
I love it. Like, but you're still helping people though. That's the dope part.
We hope so. We hope so.
I'm and sure I mean, you get some wild questions and scenarios, though.
Yeah,
right?
But I mean, but people come with everything from it's a range. You know, we had a woman at a show, and she didn't even do this anonymously. She came up to the mic and shared with me and B about being the last living member of her family. Her siblings are gone. Her parents are gone. And having to go, her mom was the last one to go. How do you clean out your childhood home that's full of memories of all the people you lost? How do you get through that? Then the next person who came to the mic said he found the Negro that stole his car. But the dude only got one leg. Should he still fight him?
Absolutely.
Wait, you said absolutely.
Absolutely.
No.
What?
No.
But he stole his car. He
First off, if a dude with one leg steal your car, that's God.
Right. That's what I'm like.
You
wait,
gotta let that go.
Oh.
Okay.
And that's what the show is.
You are
real.
I'm
working on myself. Because I actually, it's so funny that you said that. My friend who's also an Aries, she sent me a video of this lady who was talking about, like, getting into it with somebody, basically. And she said she had to teach herself. Sometimes you are the blessing. You know, that God had to put you in front of that
person. Sometimes you got to teach people a lesson.
No, God had to put you in front of that person to get out whatever they had to get out.
Got it.
And you just take that as a, all right, I was the blessing. I'll take the L. I'm still growing.
See, I
love that concept. I love it. But
we played a long game.
You stealing my car.
Plot people's deaths.
Listen. Listen. So,
you got to let some stuff go.
I digress.
So it's hard, though, especially like I grew up in the hood, so sometimes it's hard to let stuff go because there's always that balance
of,
like,
you work hard to get your shit.
Do I teach this person a lesson, or you know what I mean? Like,
because if you don't teach them, they're going to keep on doing it.
But you got to, you know, growth.
Like spanking.
Growth. I'm less likely to pop off now than.
I told him to let it ride and to steal his crutches or steal his scooter.
That's what I'm saying. You got to play the long game.
That's a good way to get back.
Take his crutches.
Loosen the wheels. Take his prosthetic.
Loosen
the screw on the fake leg.
I can't.
As long as I don't just let him ride. You know what I mean? Like, he gonna have to.
I'm just saying,
something.
Slowly plot their demise. This is terrible advice. Okay, this is not advice, but we just rehashing.
And now you see why I have a licensed therapist on stage.
There you go. Yeah.
To balance.
Exactly. That's a good idea.
Yeah. So, I want to go back, you know, a little bit back. Shout out to FAMU. We went to HBCUs. I went to the illustrious Howard University.
Okay.
1867, the real HU, the first HU.
I swear black people be reading off the whole.
The whole.
Just say the name of your college.
He's throwing me shots because I went to Hampton.
The other HU.
You
Hampton University founded in 1872 by the illustrious George Washington Carver, who then on that day with one brick built seven buildings. And we honor those seven buildings every year during the halftime of the football. You know. And I'm like, man.
We literally, it's taught to
How
us.
How would people be on that, especially
at registration?
Like a whole mantra.
At registration, like, I mean, not literally.
You have whole
I'm Florida A&M, registered in the highest of seven hills in Tallahassee.
Whole
every school got a speech.
University 101 classes about, you got to learn the hymn and all of that.
So I wanted to ask, you know, I love, you know, us that have gone to HBCUs and we're thriving in our, you know, our industry and our careers. Do you feel like, or what were the pros and cons of going to an HBCU? Because, you know, we do have pros and cons, but especially when it pertains to your career and like how it's prepared you.
I don't have any cons, only because I don't have any comparisons. Mm-hmm. And from what I can tell from black kids that go to white schools, they had issues too. I think every college is going to have issues, whether it's dorms and lack of housing, or whether it's parking, or the financial aid didn't get cut on time. Okay, well, go to a white school. Maybe they got their affairs in order in that regard, but then there might be a culture part that you're lacking. And then when you get out into the real world, you're a little bit behind. And I just think there's certain intangibles that you pick up at a black college that you're not going to be able to pick up in a book. You're not going to be able to pick up, you know, from some help book or whatever like that. You know, for me, my father died when I was 16, my senior year of high school. So when I got to FAMU, what I had in hindsight, didn't realize it at the time, but in hindsight, what I had was a series of black men who in their own way were filling in some of the gaps. Partially. No one man was a complete be-all, end-all, not supposed to be. But if it came to support and somebody believing in you, if it came to someone encouraging you to pursue a dream, and even though you have doubts about it, and you're surrounded by people who aren't pursuing their own dreams, like those little things, those intangibles, having people willing to pull me aside after a class, for me, that was a benefit. I don't know if you get that at a white school. I feel like that's you real. Probably wouldn't if you don't have the same degree of black professors. Mm-hmm. You know, I had at the time, assistant dean, Dr. Hawkins. And you know, Dr. Hawkins, this brother was no nonsense. And he was the one who would see you walking in the hall, goofing off, and just pull you to the side. And he'd go, "You know I know your GPA, right?"
That's a gut punch. Excuse me?
And he would just say, "Go do something." Go stop being out here.
Stop being out here.
That's very true. Yeah.
So it was little things like that that for me were a big help.
Yeah.
They were a very big help.
I gotta be cliche because Father's Day is coming up, and I know like fatherhood is definitely a part of who you are, and you lost your dad young. But were there some lessons that you like? What I'm learning about myself as a parent is that there are some things that I've learned that at the time in the moment it didn't seem like they were clicking, and then you become an adult, you become a parent, and it's like, oh shit. So like, are there some things from your dad that you picked up, some lessons in fatherhood that may have been unintentionally funny, or like it clicked in the moment in your own journey as a parent?
So it's two things my dad and I used to do together that stand out. When I got my learner's permit, I was his driver. When I was 15, like the last year of my dad's life, my dad worked up until like 2 weeks before he died.
Oh, wow.
So just a grinder, just cancer, no chemo. I want to work. Wow. Chemo gonna make me weak. I'd rather go to the radio station.
Wow.
Give me two aspirins, which is why I like can never complain. In hindsight, I'm like, maybe you should have laid down.
Yeah. Baby boomers be playing though. Okay, I mean, that's a whole other conversation about you know.
Yeah,
that's real.
So there was a work ethic thing that was just, I don't know, like just osmosis. That's not a word. Into me, osmosatization of being in his presence, you know. And I can take you back first grade, second grade, when he used to take me with him to the radio station at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, wow.
Dope.
My pops woke up. My pops was one of them old school black people, wake up without an alarm clock.
Wow.
Oh, snap.
Wow.
Every day just 4:30. And would be at the radio station in front of the mic at 5:05.
Wow.
Jeez. We hit the door at 5.
Oh,
he'd rip something off the wire printer. You know, back in the day, the news, there was one printer in the radio station in the 80s, and that printer was connected to the basic-ass internet at the time. He'd look through that, find a couple stories that were relevant to black folks, and hit those.
This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Welcome to the Snapple Market Auditory Experience. Close your eyes. Imagine you're walking into your neighborhood store. You make your way to the back and reach for your favorite Snapple flavor. You can't wait. You take a sip. Whoa, that's a lot of flavor. What flavor are you holding? Now open your eyes and check out Snapple.com to find ridiculously flavorful Snapple near you.
My father always said to me, and I didn't get it at the time, you'll be worth more from your neck up than you'll ever be from your neck down. Mm. And it was about valuing intelligence and education. I just, you just don't get it. But then now that I'm older, it's like, oh, I get it. So that's what I try and stress to my son. But he don't get it. But also don't expect him to. But I just keep saying it because in my head, I just know I'm planting the seed for when you 27, and then you go, oh, that's what daddy meant. But, you know, going with my father to speaking engagements, you know, really put into focus everything that he stood for, what he valued, and his ideology about blackness. So from first grade to when I used to drive him to the gigs, you know, driving to the gigs was the one thing. The other thing we used to do together was grocery shop. And so my pops would go, we would go into Western supermarkets or Piggly Wiggly. And he would, I'd be damned if my pops didn't have a stack of coupons.
Oh, so do you do that now? And
I try not to. But
coupon
it's like,
is a lot of work.
Man,
I can't help it, bro.
Yeah, I can't do it either.
The problem with coupons, though, is that coupons came in the paper and newspapers died. And I don't read papers tangibly anymore. So
they got coupons on apps.
You
gotta,
but you gotta remember that the app exists, and it's a whole other thing.
You gotta like they used, you gotta be on Groupon. Find all that stuff. So, but the discounts are out there.
They out there.
But my pops about being good with your money and being efficient. What's the better buy? We would stand there for 10 minutes, freezing in the dairy department, doing math. It's half a pound of cheese. It's $2 off, or you can get a pound of cheese for $1.50 off. Let's see which is the better buy. And the retail price of this cheese is lower than the retail price of the half. Like,
just off the dome.
Equations.
Like, yeah.
That's deep.
Yeah, that's but deep. That's how he would buy milk like that. He, you know, you get $2 off, but a half gallon of this milk times two costs more than a gallon of this milk. So a dollar off this gallon is better than $2 off the half gallon, because
that's
you're essentially getting more milk
okay,
for your
money. Like,
but yeah, that's how
but yeah,
he,
yeah, no,
that's the matrix code he saw.
Yeah.
So now I'm like that with purchases.
Okay.
You know, like when you start buying stuff and looking at sneakers, okay, this sneaker is nice, but I like that sneaker and this sneaker. And then you start ordering t-shirts and merchandise and this costs $4. This costs $2. Yeah. This plus, like.
Are you into sneakers by any chance? Are you a sneakerhead?
Anything? I like sneakers that look nice. Don't come up to me in public asking me the name of these sneakers.
Yeah, it's like. It's
motherfucker, it's a sneaker. I'm sorry for cussing. It's a sneaker. You know them kids, they come up to you.
Yeah.
Oh, you got the OG veteran one, Scooby Doo.
I
didn't know.
Are they real? Look, that's all I want to know.
And they green. I got some green shoes. Them the Incredible Hulks. OG. Okay.
You drag me right now.
Yeah.
Glad you like them, youngin.
Right. I am the same way.
I get respect from the youngins on my
shoes.
Right
now I got on the Beffy's Beauty Supply. Okay,
but they be trying to bond.
Yeah, and
I be missing moments, but that's how I miss moments with reaching the youth, because I don't know the culture enough.
So,
which I think is the right thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I don't want to freak him out and be like, yeah, you damn right, these are Scooby Doo's. These are dead stuff. But then he'd be like, that's weird. He's trying to be young.
Yeah, right. There's, you know, I don't know.
Respect my grades.
Right,
I don't know what I'm talking about.
You know, I love the stories of your dad. You know, speaking of parents, your mom, Miss Joyce, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Shout out to her, first of all. I was reading about her fighting for equality in education.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Down in Mississippi.
Super, yeah, super dope, super dope. I love history, by the way. But before we get into, of course, White House Correspondents' Dinner performance, I want to know, how was it feeling to be able to bring her there and, you know, have her see you perform? And how were your nerves before all of that?
I'm not nervous performing in front of my mother. My mom, let's just start, first of all, my mama just like dressing up.
I love it.
I love that.
Coming to
classic black mom.
Banquets. Yeah, you know, yeah. Black mamas love circle tables.
Yeah. Circle tables.
That's really
that's real.
Really
true.
When you boil down the correspondence dinner, it's just another circle table. Mm-hmm. Circle table and chicken. Mm-hmm. It's literally, it was fish and steak. I take that back. It was fish and steak.
Oh,
okay. You know, they do it big at the White House. No chicken.
What was it seasoned?
It was all right. It was all right. Well, the fish was a little bland, but the steak was hidden.
Okay.
The steak was hidden.
All right.
Yeah. So, you know, nervous to a degree. I think nerve and fear is important in performance. It keeps you honest. It keeps you aware of the stakes of the situation, but ultimately, you just got to go do the job. Either you're prepared or you're not. And so once it got to the day, it was a little more. I was nervous around other people, but like, so like, you got to remember the day starts with, Like, you wake up and, damn, what did I do that morning?
It's all up.
I went, my son was there, my mom's was there. I slept in. I remember that because I was out till 1 a.m. running the jokes at the comedy club the night before. And I had all these events that I was going to Friday night. And so I started with going over my notes with my writers. And then as the day started, got dressed, got out into the hotel. And it was just droves of people. And everybody's got something to say to you. And, you know, you're talking and you're meeting, like, amazing people. So it's like, on the one hand, should I be preparing and working on the speech more? Goddamn, that's Gayle King and Brittany Griner over there. The hell is Zooey Deschanel? Is that John Legend? Dang. Like, you're just,
what?
Just random people that you kind of want to go over and say hello to.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're at this party, and it's, you know, it's thousands of people. And then they move you into a smaller room where we're in, like, this VIP reception where we meet the vice president. So it's me, my mom, my folks. At this point, it's maybe 300 people. Then you go from another room to another room. Now it's just you and the people that are going to be up on the dais. So now it's about 10 people.
Wow.
And then you go, you get in line, and it's just you and the people on your side of the podium. So now it's 5 people. So your day has gone from 2,000 people to 5.
Jeez.
And then you're out there alone.
A Secret Service, right?
Yeah, Secret Service. They everywhere. Yeah, they're hanging around the whole. So.
And then you being alone.
So now you're alone.
Jeez.
And so that's when I wasn't nervous anymore. Because I'm like, oh, this is just like every other show.
Mm-hmm.
You prep, and then you're just up there by yourself.
Yeah.
So for all the fanfare and camaraderie and all of the people I met and every party I went to and just all of this rah-rah-rah and hoopla, when it's time to do the job, you're alone. It's just you, and either you're ready or you're not. Mm. So you should have taken more time. So at that point, nervousness leaves.
Yeah.
I do not care about my mother. Like, even the shout out to her came a little later in the creation process that afternoon with my writers. But my job is to perform, and I cannot care who's in the audience. I cannot care about the consequences of failure. Mm-hmm. Failure is real. Failure is an option, but I'm not going to obsess over it. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, this is the stuff I wanted to talk about. So either y'all love it or you don't. Ain't nobody's career ended because of this. There's people that some people like. There's people that some people love more than others when it comes to this event. But this is not a career ender. Mm-hmm. You know, this isn't something where, man, I'll never recover. Nobody will hire me ever again.
Right.
They'll just go, that wasn't good. And I'll go, okay, it's a weird room. It's a weird event, which it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. It's,
like, when you think about that, you are doing comedy that is essentially cooked fresh that week.
Yeah.
Most comedy specials you see on television are prepared and polished over the course of 6 months to a year.
You also get to say to these politicians what a lot of everyday people are thinking, too.
And that's a responsibility.
Yeah.
So I have to do that. I can't ignore that. I have to honor the position of the voter. The constituent, because that's essentially what the comedian is up there to represent, is the view of the constituent. I'm the only person in this room that wasn't elected, you know. I guess Caitlyn Jenner wasn't elected. She was Kellyanne Conway. But you get what I'm saying.
Yeah,
in terms of representing a regular, everyday person, that is what the job of a comedian is supposed to be in that space, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So, you know, sink or swim at this point. But at that point, nervousness clouds you. So then I just got angry. I got angry. Like, anger is, like, for me, an important emotion when it comes to execution. Really? Fear for preparation, anger for execution.
Ooh.
Because now it's like, well, yeah, y'all need to hear this. That y'all need to know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, y'all can kiss my ass. You know what, man?
Yeah.
Hey, Joe Biden.
Yeah.
Here's your classified documents you left up here.
Yeah. That was, and that Carl Winslow.
That's it. But those are first jokes. Yeah. Those are like the first, and you can't practice that in a comedy club.
Yeah.
Right. So this is a joke only for this moment. The Don Lemon, Tucker Carlson stuff had literally just happened 5 days earlier.
Yeah.
So it wasn't much I could say. I can't not mention it.
Yeah. I love that.
So you've run this stuff in comedy clubs. I know this. I know what parts of this is funny.
Yeah.
I got on stage every night for 3 hours. The 3 hours worth of sets. Every night for the last 2 weeks, prepping all of this shit. Mm-hmm. So I know it's funny. I know where it's funny because I've talked to regular people. This is not a room of, y'all are not normal.
Yeah.
Y'all aren't regular people.
Yeah.
So I don't care what you think. I don't care if you're not going to laugh.
I love that.
So that's the emotion heading up to the podium. Mm-hmm. Now, mind you, the whole time I'm thinking this, Jill Biden is talking to me. And I got to be polite. On Jill, President wife, she, the first lady is always kind.
Yeah.
Well, hello, and you're from Alabama. And what's Alabama? And do you like Alabama? Do you root for Nick Saban? And in my head, I'm like, I can't stand these people.
I'm about to roast the fuck out of this.
And it's nothing personal to you. You're just making chit-chat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I have to go up on this podium and stand before America.
Yeah.
I have to be in a right. So there's a duality happening, you know, even in that moment. But the moment they say your name and you walk up to the microphone, it's like every other gig, you're alone and it's just you and your thoughts. And just be honest and, you know, be honest in your delivery. Yeah. Whatever happens on the other side of that, you know you did what you prepared for. You did what you prepared to do. How it was received is beyond me. But I'm not going to walk away from this thinking that I wasn't funny. Afterwards, it's like a huge exhale. That's when you can kind of just sit.
Not everyone's on you, like.
Oh, no, before that.
Also, like, before that. Just like the release.
Oh, got it, right,
like,
okay.
I sat down. There's a picture on my Instagram of me sitting at the table by myself as the room is dispersing. And like, that's the picture I'm going to get framed. Like, of all the moments, just at that moment afterwards, like, it's the end of the first Avengers movie where they're eating shawarma, and they've just saved the world from whatever threat that movie, and they're literally just exhausted, and they're just eating food, and nobody's talking.
Yeah.
And it was perfect. It was a perfect, like, that photograph literally captures it, because it's like, because even after the performance, to a degree, you're alone, which is what I love about this job. But you have to remember to, like, reconnect with people, because you'll plug into just being alone, because in your head is where, that's where you harvest the thoughts.
And the voices are,
wow. But as soon as I come off the stage, I sit down. Tamara Keith, head of the Correspondents Association, she goes up, ladies and gentlemen, that concludes it. Thank you. Thank you. Good night. And then president, vice president leave. I shake a couple hands, and then I was just up there alone.
Babies.
Yeah, I just, everybody left the stage. I just sat there and took it all in. And it was like the first time that I was like truly present.
Wow.
The entire time I was in D.C. was after I did my job.
Mm-hmm. That's a good feeling, though, like right after. You know, you killed it.
Cathartic.
Just, yeah.
Yeah, I figured some people would, like, have problems with certain jokes, and they did, and that's fine. But the stuff I needed to get laughs got laughs. I made a point. So it's not a loss.
Nah.
And, like, what's weird is that that's how most comedians, I think that's how we like measure success.
It's dangerous to be a comedian now though. Jeez.
Didn't lose.
Right. Yeah.
Somebody's mad. Okay, what are they mad about? Oh, one joke? Cool.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts on that? Like, you know, I feel like with social media and everybody having a chance to speak out on certain issues and shit goes viral. With jokes and like comedians, you know, how do you feel about how people are taking, you know, things a little too serious? Do you feel like now it's different from back then? You could be a little bit more raw back then.
I just think the difference is that regular people have an outlet to go, hey, didn't like that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's just more opinions are out there. I think those same opinions were out there in the past. I mean, George Carlin, there would be hecklers at his shows from time to time who didn't agree with something he said. You know, I think that we're definitely in an era where people don't want to hear certain things, and they have a right to. But I really feel like we're also in a world where the people who want to hear what you're talking about, they know how to find you.
Mm-hmm.
I just think we're in an era where people have opinions and they're allowed to have opinions. But I don't think any of it has stopped any comedian from making money on the road. A particular company may not want to book you for something because of something you said that made a bunch of their customers mad. But that's a company. They got a right to do that. That's a private sector.
Yeah.
And I think people want freedom of expression without freedom of opinion of your expressions, freedom of consequence. You don't get freedom from consequence. Mm. There might be consequences. You say something, somebody might not want to break bread with you.
Right.
That's the game. Yeah. So
that's what I'll always be in my head. I'll be nervous about that because I'm the type of the guy who wants to make everybody happy.
I mean, I'll be wanting to track IP addresses so I could show up at their house and fight.
She is good.
Sorry.
I'm scared. Look.
No, but like I'm not worried about anyone who doesn't like me or doesn't like a joke. Mm-hmm. That's fine. That's in passing.
Does it take work? Does it take practice to kind of get that thick skin, or have you always kind of been that way anyway?
No, that takes work. Mm. You know, I got lucky because when we did Last Comic Standing in 2010, the network made us live tweet.
Oh, wow.
A contractual obligation.
Oh, wow.
So, and this is the early days of live tweeting as a TV performer.
Yeah, Twitter was really the wild, wild west.
Yeah, so folks were saying whatever they...
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's all under the hashtag. So I have to follow the hashtag to engage with people who like me.
Yeah.
But within that hashtag is the people who hate you.
It's like levels to it, right? Because it's people that just don't like your comedy, and then people that don't like you because you're a black man, like whatever. So I can imagine.
Every Monday night for 7 weeks because I kept advancing. So every week I was on the show and kept advancing, I'd have to read another round of tweets about me.
Damn.
But by the third week, you see the repetition.
Mm.
And say, like, oh, that's all y'all got.
Yeah.
It's not even personal. It's just an outlet for some people. For some people, hatred, digital hatred, it's a real outlet. I got that after the correspondence dinner.
Mm-hmm.
I got a gang of emails.
And you thought it'd be funny half the time. Like, the stuff they say to you, like, it's just like, okay, whatever.
Yeah, and for the most part, it's short, it's quick, it's to the point. It's like, okay, that's just how you get your rocks off.
Yeah.
So, no, it doesn't bother me because, you know, hate is still an emotion. And I think if you're doing something as a performer that invokes emotion, I think that's a net positive.
And it's still engagement. So, like, if you were to post a video or something.
There you go.
You could hate, but you still came here and commented.
You're still clicking.
So, yeah, apathy. Apathy, I really think, is that's the real indifference. That's the devil.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody being mad at me and having an opinion, cool. Cool. Fox News took one of my clips from the correspondence dinner and posted it on their website to use it to attack the left. And then people from the left were taking clips to show that I attacked the right.
Wow.
And I was like, perfect.
Cool.
Do what you want to do. But no, somebody calling me whatever racial slur of the week, or I don't know. That was a good one. that was a really good one. It was like bubble lip baboon. Like it was like it was like three B's. I can't remember the third B. Big bubble lip bully baboon. Like it was like tongue twister. Yeah. But never said the N word.
Yeah.
I respect that.
Yeah.
Like they actually tried to put some thought into it.
It was like, oh, you're trying to make new slurs. So yeah, I kind of laugh at that. I haven't replied to a lot of it yet.
Are you going to?
It depends. Mm. The longer the email, the more likely I am to reply.
Ooh.
But if you just go, hey, N-word, and you're dark and shut up.
Yeah.
right.
That's not it.
That ain't worth
it. I'm gonna kind of lighten the tone a little bit. We have to talk about this, right? Like, so we're celebrating 50 years of AURN, but we're also celebrating 50 years of hip hop. A lot going on. No, you're into hip hop. I saw a tweet that you did. I don't know when this tweet happened, but you said that Petey Pablo had like the top three Where You From anthem.
Yeah.
I don't know if there was more that followed that, but tell me, what are your top three Where You From anthems?
See, now you're making me think. And let me be specific when I say Where You From anthem. I'm talking about a song that is specifically an ode to a place.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's dope.
So, like, because somebody was like, oh, Nelly Country Grammar, Juvenile Ha. And I'm like, no.
Because it's not an ode
not
to.
Those are lead
place.
Singles. Yeah. Those are their first singles. And they're shots out to the aesthetic of New Orleans and St. Louis within those records. And you're learning about their culture through that song. But the song is not about that city. I need a song specifically about a place. Petey Pablo, Raise Up, is about North Carolina. He named every jail.
Yeah.
I was from L.A. and I didn't know nothing about it.
Really?
We was doing this to our shirt.
That song had me, like, that's Petey Pablo. That was one of them songs that made you wish you was from another.
That's real.
Almost, for like a week, you was like, man, I wish I was from Charlotte. California Love, for sure.
Come on, yeah.
California knows how to party, California City, LA. Like, it's just.
And that came out during the time, like, at the height of the East Coast, West Coast. Yep. And it was like, I know for me growing up in New York, like, I rock with that song, but I kind of felt like, oh, shit. Should I not like it? Am I supposed to like this? I'm from New York.
As a Southerner, I have to choose Welcome to Atlanta.
I was about to say the same thing. Welcome to Atlanta, where the play is played.
Because that song as a Where You From anthem, Jermaine Dupri, like, literally gives you a whole itinerary in here. At Stroker's on Wednesday.
Yep.
And then on Thursday. Then Friday. Yep. And then on Sunday, you like writing it all out. Okay, that's my agenda when we go to Atlanta.
Right. Yep.
Like, that's what I mean when a song is literally about the city.
Yep.
Honorable mention, Born and Raised, DJ Khaled, Trick Daddy, Pitbull. That one is, it's not one of the best Miami songs from a Miami rapper, but in terms of like Born and Raised in the County of Dade, it's like, okay, this is where I'm from. It's an ode to the city.
Yeah.
I tried to think of New York ones.
Deja Vu.
See, I'm not up. I mean, I'm up on Lord Tariq and Peter Guns now, but like growing up, that was not something that was played down south.
Right, not in LA either.
Actually, I don't think there's, because I was thinking about that as you were talking.
And then part of me is like, okay, Fat Joe, Ja Rule, New York. But that was, I was having an argument with my friend. Is that an ode to New York or is that a diss record?
Right. It feels more like a threat than anything. Like,
It wasn't about come to New York and enjoy the double-decker bus and the train.
Right. Cam and Jay had Welcome to
New York. Come to New York. I'm from New York.
No, I
will murder you.
Yeah. You're right. That's pretty real.
I got 100 guns.
Oh, my gosh.
The hook of the song is literally, I got 100 guns. 100
clips.
100 clips. I'm from New York.
Yes. Like, wow, that's something to think about.
Not listening to that, saying, "Ooh, we gotta take the family to New York."
Right, that's very true. Oh my gosh,
where's California? It's all love from Diego to the Bay.
Right.
Your city is the bomb. If your city
that makes
making
me kinda
pay,
sad. Yeah. Like I'm sitting, I'm like,
I got 100 guns, 100 clips.
That should tell you a little something about the people
from
New
York.
Sheesh.
No, I couldn't, when you think of like Ode to the City anthems, I couldn't think of one that hit me the way Raise Up or Cali Love or Welcome to Atlanta. Like Welcome to Atlanta was just such a, that was just such an era.
Then the remix.
We played that in Birmingham. We ain't even in Georgia. We was like, man, play that again. No problem.
That's cool. Amazing.
Yeah, but 50 years of hip hop, man, it's amazing. Here's a question for y'all. As we look, because when I look at hip hop now, the thing that makes me sad is that I feel like the young generation, as it is currently standing now, they are dealing with far more trauma from drug overdoses and from the death of their artists, which to me bleeds into informing your hopefulness about your own situation, right? If your favorite artist can't make it out, or your favorite artist, because like, think about it, our rappers died 2-3 albums in.
Yeah.
Where there was an optimism, and I'm not even trying to be funny, but you get what I'm saying.
I get it.
Yeah.
They left you with something to still have hope. Sure. Whereas now, a lot of the newer artists that died, they die before, they're dying on the off-ramp to success. They're not even on the free, they're dying on the on-ramp to success. They're not even on the freeway and get to enjoy anything. Like, it really pains me. It really pains me to see them deal with so much death and loss within the hip hop community now, because I wonder what hip hop is going to look like for those kids when they're 40.
No, I agree.
And when they're 50. Wow. You know, as much as I laugh about it,
it's concerning.
As much as I laugh about reality shows now, it's kind of cool to see your rap at 55. Fighting and arguing on that, like I don't want to escape,
like
yelling
cruises,
at each other.
Like, our
but I'm glad you're alive. Yeah,
who's coming? Like you want to live?
Busta Rhymes on stage with Janet
performing
live for the first time.
That was.
I didn't even know they had never done that song live before. They never.
And I'm a huge Janet fan.
And if you've never seen Busta Rhymes live, I mean, you gotta make
and
that
that's
happen.
A gift. It's a gift to see something that meant so much to you in your 20s still around, giving you joy now. Like the Essence Fest reunion shows, and was
like
it the Grammys
to make it to that? I got it.
The Grammys last year when they did the hip hop tribute and they had everybody. As much as I celebrate 50 years, part of me sits in hurt for the youth because I don't know what the construct of their music flashbacks are going to be.
I get it.
You know what I mean? And so that part of it kind of makes me sad because hip hop was supposed to be the thing that was to help you escape reality. And in a lot of degrees now for a lot of kids, hip hop only confirms the reality and horrors that they're dealing with.
Yeah.
And so how do you find hope if you can't even find an artist to have hope? Put hope behind, you know, athletes help, but music for everybody, that's the thing that's supposed to uplift you. So, you know, that part of it, you know, that makes me sad. I know you tried to do this to keep us from being down again.
Hey, look,
and I brought you right back to sad.
But that's real.
It's
we
real
was talking all the racism and correspondence, and you said, okay, lighter note. Petey Pablo, I'm sad that the youngins ain't got no heroes. That's my bad.
No, it's okay.
That's my bad. I'm just
you
a
brought
sad.
It back. You brought
I'm
it
just
back.
Sad.
You brought it back.
I'm sorry.
I'm just saying.
It's something to think about, though, because if we're going to talk about this legacy, we have to talk about everything.
That's real.
So, yeah. Okay. I mean, is there anything else you are working on that you want to share with us that people need to check out?
No, I'm laying low right now. Tribulations is the main thing. My live tour is Happy to Be Here. We're doing 20 cities, adding 10 more pretty soon. RoyWoodJr.com. is the website for tickets. Pretty much everywhere from Sacramento to Miami to Minneapolis. We zigzagging all over the country, man, all four time zones. Is it four time zones? Yeah, it's four time zones in America. Pacific, Mountain, Central, East.
Yes.
Okay, all right. Yeah, I went to public school. And then also the show is Tribulations, tribulationsshow.com. If you want to watch some of the content on demand, if you want to come to a live show, it's a really dope situation.
Oh. Nice. Awesome. Well, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you all. This was fun. Yes. I'm glad my voice made it. My voice made it all the way through.
Look, look, you did it.
You made it through. And thank you all for tuning in to the season finale of the AURN podcast.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.